Influencer marketing has finally come to politics. Not sure yet if that's a good thing for anyone. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. Earlier this month, Democratic presidential hopeful Michael Bloomberg hired a team of meme creators to post viral social media content for his campaign. Given the polls at the moment, it doesn't seem like it worked, but we are definitely still talking about it. The sponsored content sidestepped Facebook and Instagram's rules on political ads. That actually prompted the company to create a new policy around sponsored content by politicians. And since other candidates might catch on that influencer marketing is a $15 billion industry, we will probably see more of this as the year wears on. Taylor Lorenz is a reporter at the New York Times writing about internet culture. I asked her first, are there any regulations on how candidates use branded content?
Well, not really a ton. The FTC, which is the Federal Trade Commission, has tried to issue rules and guidelines around disclosure on sponsored content. It has not been effective. There's really no way to police these massive platforms. The majority of content related to politics is not sponsored. It's organic content. So when you look at, you know, who's generating the most online conversation, it's undeniably Trump and Bernie Sanders. And I think that, you know, Bloomberg is trying to kind of make a name for himself online through this paid content. But, you know, you have the vast, vast, vast majority of political content on these platforms discussing Sanders and Trump.
Right. What do you think is the relative wisdom of this kind of campaign, knowing that it primarily targets pretty young users who either might be too young to vote or who historically have not been that active in elections?
I wouldn't say it targets that young users, to be honest. You know, the accounts that posted these memes actually have a much older audience. So it really is the millennial memers. They wanted in on this. They're trying to make a buck anywhere. I think it's just worth noting that for Bloomberg to sort of be in the running on the internet, he has to pay for it. He's not able to generate that grassroots support that some of the other sort of more outsider candidates have. So, we'll see if it's successful and if these people actually come out to the polls.
And it gets to this kind of like age old question, like ever since there's been viral internet content, there have been people who have been trying to manufacture viral internet content. And you could argue that while some things do go viral, maybe more than they used to in terms of brands, it's still a kind of an uphill strategy. Like, is it something that no other candidate is going to try because it takes either so much money or time?
Well, again, not to bring him up again, but it's just sort of this. Sanders is a candidate who he himself is really the influencer, and he has, you know, gotten the majority of support from actual influencers like YouTube stars. So, you know, he hasn't had to spend a dime on that. Bloomberg's viewpoints don't generally have that kind of organic young support. But when you're a candidate like Bloomberg, where you don't have that youth support baked in, you have to essentially try to buy it.
Taylor Lorenz covers internet culture for The New York Times. The Bloomberg campaign has not disclosed how much it spent on social media memes. And now for some related links. The New York Times and The Guardian both have pieces this week arguing that the Bloomberg campaign is really pushing the limits of social media. First, by sidestepping those ad rules that would have led to maximum transparency around its sponsored content. Facebook, in fact, doesn't even consider paid influencer marketing to be advertising, which means the memes won't show up in its public archive of political ads. And then last week, the Bloomberg campaign passed around a doctored video from one of the debates that seemed uncomfortably close to a deepfake for some people. And Twitter suspended 70 pro-Bloomberg accounts for basically being spam. As The Verge noted Tuesday, it's possible all these social media efforts are just backfiring. But then again, we still don't know how much of social media trends actually make it into the real world. I guess we'll find out next Tuesday. And here's what else we're watching in tech. So, Clearview AI. That's that company that built a database of 3 billion images that it scraped up off the internet and sold facial recognition tech to law enforcement. And remember how I was like, haha, what happens if that database ever gets stolen or sold? But turns out I had not considered the other option, which is what happens if someone steals the list of law enforcement customers that use Clearview AI. Apparently, that happened. The company told its customers on Wednesday that someone stole the entire client list, as well as information about how many searches those customers performed. I can't imagine any good will come of that. In sort of a roundabout climate tech story, Google announced that it will invest more than $10 billion in data centers and offices around the U.S. this year. And it said the investment will create all kinds of jobs, like construction to build the data centers, and specifically jobs in renewable energy, as Google also builds or funds clean energy projects to offset all the data center energy use. Yay? In coronavirus news, biotech companies are rushing to try to come up with vaccines for the virus. A small company called Moderna has shipped an experimental vaccine to the National Institutes of Health, which is going to start clinical trials next month. Moderna went public in 2018 and started working on the vaccine with funding from a coalition started in January by the countries of Norway and India that includes funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the World Economic Forum. And researchers are looking into how to use automation and robotics to do medical tasks and telemedicine to keep hospital staff and doctors safe as the virus spreads. We'll actually be talking to our China correspondent, Jennifer Pak, about a lot of this on tomorrow's show. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.